I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central Show. TCS is brought to you by MTN Business. Visit mtnbusiness.co.za to learn more about their products and solutions. And we thank them for partnering with Tech Central to bring you these great interviews. My guest today is Tiffany Dunsdon, who was until recently CEO of the very successful, previously listed IT company, Adapt IT. Tiffany was recently appointed as acquiring group leader for the Middle East and Africa at Omegro, a portfolio company within Volaris Group, which is itself owned or a subsidiary of Constellation Software, which is a large Canadian company. In her new role, Tiffany is heading up M&A across the Middle East and Africa for Omegro and Adapt IT, and she has a long history in the IT and software services space. And her involvement in Adapt IT goes all the way back to 2007, when the business she was leading at the time, InfoWave Holdings, acquired Adapt IT. The sale of Adapt IT to Volaris Group was, how shall we put this, rather complicated as a hostile and unwanted bidder emerged in the form of JSE-listed Huge Group. Tiffany, it's great to see you. You're not in the country often, I believe, so it's great to have you in the studio and welcome.
Thank you, Duncan. It's great to see you again, and I am in the country often these days.
So, oh, are you? Good.
Which is a lovely thing to be able to do now. So
That's great. Yeah. So you obviously travel a lot. You have a home in Perth as well, in Australia. You must spend time in the Middle East as well.
I do. I spend a lot of time traveling, quite a lot of time in South Africa now. My children are grown up, so that makes it much easier. And yes, the Africa and the Middle East are my predominant territories and focus area. As an acquiring group leader for Omegro. Mm-hmm. And so that's only fitting that I spend a lot of time on the ground here.
Okay. So tell me a bit about Omegro and Constellation Software and how this all fits together and how this deal actually happened in the first place.
Okay. So maybe I'll start with how the deal happened. So as you alluded to in your intro, we had an unsolicited offer for Adapt IT in 2021.
Did that come before any of the Constellation Volaris talks started?
So in actual fact, in December 2020, we had a conversation with one of the senior acquiring executives at Volaris, which was just in the ordinary course of them reaching out to companies they may wish to acquire, to introduce themselves and have those conversations to establish a relationship. That happened in December 2020, and the unsolicited offer arrived in January 2021. That same gentleman, Mike Dufton, got hold of me the very day that news broke to say if he could be of assistance, we should chat. So that is how it came to be.
There'd been nothing communicated to the market at that stage about Volaris and
nothing at all. No. Because at that point we were not for sale. The business was not for sale.
So the offer from Huge Group was from left field. You weren't expecting it.
Correct.
What was your initial reaction when?
A surprise.
When it emerged, yeah.
Surprise, to say the least. Certainly on the JSE, unsolicited offers have had a very poor track record, if any success whatsoever. So it's not really a well-founded strategy. Mm-hmm. It would have been better had there been a friendly approach. Mm-hmm. However, we needed to respond at that time to those circumstances. So, in those circumstances, the best thing that a board can do is to bring a potential buyer of reference, an ultimate best buyer for a company, in order to give shareholders the good comparison of what a buyer of reference may pay for the asset. So obviously we were one year into COVID, or 9-10 months into COVID at that time. So there was a lot of uncertainty. There were instances of companies suffering over gearing on the JSE. So our share price was suppressed at the time, below intrinsic value, which proved to be the case by the time a sensible offer was made for the company. So
Huge Group probably noticed the share price was depressed.
Correct. Yeah. And which was an opportunistic move on their part, I think. The ultimate response is to give shareholders choice in those circumstances. When management really can only back one horse in that type of situation, And so when management chooses to back a particular bidder, it's because they believe that bidder would be the ultimate best buyer for the company and would be willing to pay a fair price. And in these circumstances, of course, you know, you're put to a fair and reasonable independent valuation as well. Mm-hmm. So it ended up with the Valaris offer receiving 87% shareholder support. And that offer was to either take cash or stay in and delist the business, which we then did. And a number of shareholders came with us, and we've subsequently rationalized the register somewhat.
So prior to Huge Group's approach, was an acquisition something in the back of your mind?
No, we were acquisitive, as you know, Duncan, and we were building for the future. No, there wasn't that thought. We believed that the company still had a lot of runway. Obviously, COVID intervened in that. Mm-hmm. We did put acquisitions on hold. And then the option was effectively to continue trading, really, you know, a moot point at that point, because in bringing in, you know, a so-called white knight buyer of reference, the resounding shareholder support for that, in the context of the pandemic and the market conditions, and at that point we did not know how long the pandemic would go on for, it was a good outcome for shareholders.
Yes.
The share was trading in the low 1 rand range, and shareholders received 7 rand. So
yes,
it was quite a substantial uplift, and shareholders resoundingly voted in favour of that. So
the story could have ended up quite differently if Huge Group hadn't approached you. A deal may never have happened.
Correct. We'd probably still be listed and be acquiring. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Did you ever have a conversation with James Herbst, the CEO of Huge Group?
I didn't, no.
Not once?
No.
Was there any engagement between the companies?
Only through the formal process.
Right. Okay. But you clearly were not keen on the Huge Group deal. You didn't think there was synergies.
Well,
I didn't.
The Huge Group, was smaller than us, and it was a share for share deal. Mm-hmm. They ended up with 1.9% of our shares, and they sold them a month later. So, I think they saw an asset that was going to be accretive to them, but clearly our shareholders didn't see the reciprocal being accretive to them. So, it's just the judgment call that shareholders made. Yeah. Whereas the Valaris offer was an all cash offer, and that received 87% support at the shareholder vote. So, the results just speak for themselves there.
And that decision to delist, might a listing be on the cards again at some point, or is this going to remain an unlisted entity now?
Unlikely. However, there is that potential within the Constellation Group. Mm-hmm. If the group grows significantly and there is a strategic acquisition, which may not be funded with cash, for example, then spin-outs are possible. You can see that in an example, the Lumen Group, which was spun out of Constellation. That would be a very down-the-road strategic move that is possible. Mm-hmm. But it's not on the cards any time in the immediate future.
Okay. If you don't mind, Tiffany, maybe just give us an overview of Constellation Software and how this all fits together and where AdaptIT fits into the bigger picture.
Okay. So Constellation is an acquirer over the last 30 years.
They're a Canadian company.
Canadian, listed on the Toronto Stock Exchange. And it's an investment holding company which really likes the asset class of software companies, particularly small and medium software companies, and it's acquired more than 100 of these in the last 30 years. It was founded by a gentleman, Mark Leonard, who came from the venture capital world, and he believed that it wasn't a good idea to actually sell assets that were returning your hurdle rate or more after, say, a period of 5 or 7 years, and he decided it would make more sense to acquire them and continue to hold them permanently and then have the impact of that compounding across time. Mm-hmm. So spending all of your time acquiring, none of your time disposing, and being a great custodian of these businesses for the long, long run. Mm-hmm. So in doing that, you are creating basically this permanent and safe home for essentially the rest of the company's life, continuing to invest in that software, which is typically B2B software, mission critical to a customer, and own IP that you then continue to enhance through innovation across time based on customer-led innovation to make sure it remains relevant and has a high value to that particular industry segment or set of customers. Proximity to the customer being extremely important and staying in close relationship with the customer. So the other philosophy is really one of decentralization and autonomy. So the businesses that are acquired, the leaders can stay within those businesses, enjoy the benefit of the best practice sharing, which is a peer-to-peer network globally now of many thousands of IT professionals, software professionals, who share their learnings and best practices in order to strengthen these businesses and make them better than they were when they came into the group. And that's really quite a superpower. Constellation's a very data-driven organization. It keeps very, very accurate data on all of its acquisitions and how they perform post-acquisition, operating metrics as well. And this is very much a fraternity of shared, you know, experience where one can actually learn from other operators firsthand, not through, you know, not through white papers, but actually talking to people who've been there and done that. And we have a lot of conferences, which is a constant investment in people and their growth, in sharing the best practices, in investing in our people so that they can really enhance their own businesses they're running and potentially grow their careers to look after more businesses, coach other businesses that might have come into the group more recently. And in fact, if their businesses become really strong, then actually become acquisitive themselves. So even the acquisition process is federated. So it's a very flat structure. And in terms of a culture, it's really one of, you know, humility, curiosity, continuous learning, data-driven decision-making, you know, really disciplined, thoughtful approach to capital allocation and to the operating of businesses.
Constellation obviously now owns a lot of software companies. I'm sure some of those companies also compete with each other. How do you manage that situation?
Yes, and that's because of the scale, that's allowed, and it would be anti-competitive not to allow that. So that is completely the case. It's a federated operating model, and different businesses belonging to Constellation can compete in the open market freely, and they do.
Okay. So what is Volaris Group and what is Omegro? How does that fit into the picture?
It is difficult with all of these brands, but that's because we keep the original brands of the companies we buy, which is really important because that's where the affinity and loyalty with the customer base lies, right? And also with the staff. So Constellation is the parent company. It's listed on the TSX. It has six independent operating groups under it. Volaris is one of those and was the first one. And that operating group has multiple portfolios and subsidiary companies within it. And this is a function of the compounding, you know, growth through the deployment of capital every year. So because it's federated, there's six operating groups, and within the operating groups, there's multiple different brands. For example, Omegro is our portfolio. There's Lumen, there's Medaxo, which is a transit group. There's Vencora, which is an insurance and financial services group. So there's multiple brands or portfolios under Volaris, basically due to scale. And the reason for that is because we want to operate as small accountable teams responsible for a subset of what Constellation does, and to have those peer-to-peer relationships which are very direct and firsthand. So everything is broken down into component parts which are very human touch, and where we deal directly with customers and one another and prospective companies that may wish to join the group. So we've got a very much devolved operating structure with a high degree of autonomy and accountability at the lowest level. And that's really the philosophy of, if you buy great businesses with good leaders and entrepreneurs who've built things, why would you not want them to continue running things as well as they have, with the benefit of, you know, the best practice sharing and then the further investment in talent? So it's really, that's really a superpower.
It's very different to how other software companies do. I mean, if you look at Oracle or Microsoft or SAP, one of those companies, they're quite acquisitive and they buy enterprise software assets. But those get merged in and subsumed into the mothership, if you will.
That's right. And I would say that's probably one of the fundamentally best things I've learned about being part of this group is that federation and autonomous lowest level of accountability and ownership is really quite a superpower. We see the level of ownership, the level of dedication, the level of you know, service to customers actually increases as a result of that. Mm-hmm. And it also frees up our leaders, because we have strong internal succession planning now, it frees up leaders to go and do new things, become acquisitive, lead other businesses, coach other businesses, for example.
As it's
it creates that opportunity. Yeah. So, you know, entrusting and empowering great people is just a great idea.
Mm-hmm. What is your background, Tiffany? Have you always been in the software space?
I am a chartered accountant by trade. Mm-hmm. And as I left the articled phase, I went overseas. I did a secondment for a while in the US, and then I worked in the UK for 3 years.
In what sort of field?
I wanted to get out of auditing.
Okay.
Which I was just interested in commerce. Mm-hmm. So when I got to the UK, I looked to get into some projects that had nothing to do with auditing or finance and reconciliations. And I worked for a consulting firm that was working with British Airways, mm-hmm. and we did 3 major projects. One was finance reengineering, one was supply chain and logistics, and the other one was IT, and a huge IT outsource. Mm-hmm. And in that process, I became very interested in the IT aspect. And when I returned to South Africa, I looked in my network to see if I could somehow get into the IT space. And I found that through my network, I did that. And that's how I came to be at InfoWave.
Okay. And so InfoWave, what was InfoWave?
InfoWave was the software provider for Illovo Sugar Group.
Yes.
In 1996, they were outsourcing non-core functions, and that is how the business
was formed.
So it
came out of Illovo, a bit like Gajima came out of Iscor.
Correct, okay. Yes. Well, I think at the time a lot of the metrics were, you know, efficiency metrics per headcount. Mm-hmm. And so headcount that wasn't in the front line of business, that was, you know, support functions, etc., mm-hmm. was businesses were seeking to outsource for that mm-hmm. reason. It was a very big trend globally, actually. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so since that time, that merger or that acquisition of Adapt IT back in 2007 by InfoWave, and then you adopted the Adapt IT name,
yes.
The business has been very acquisitive over that period. I mean, what percentage of that growth that we saw in Adapt IT over that decade and a half or so was the result of acquisitions, and how much of it came organically?
Well, a lot was through acquisitions. So, you know, we had this difficult problem of trying to diversify from the original client. Mm-hmm. That client was acquisitive in greenfields and brownfield sites into Africa. And so, you know, the attempts to grow organically were drowned out by the additional work we got from this wonderful key client of ours. And so, you know, the only way to actually dilute that client concentration risk was mm-hmm. to become acquisitive. And that's how we embarked on that journey, because, you know, you can't remain listed indefinitely with that kind of client concentration risk. It would be irresponsible. So
Okay. And how many acquisitions have you led over that period?
16.
16 deals. Mm-hmm. Okay. What was the biggest one?
The biggest one was CQS.
CQS. Okay. Mm-hmm. They were in retail? Are they?
No, they're in software for accounting and audit professionals.
Okay.
So Caseware International.
Caseware. Yeah.
So audit automation software and the production of compliant financial statements mm-hmm. With local legislation and related solutions to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Take us through then what's happened since the Volaris deal.
Yes.
You've obviously moved into a new role. There's a new CEO at Adapt IT.
Yes.
Just take us maybe through the thinking behind that and why you've moved into this new role.
Okay. So really, I think understanding Constellation is a serial acquirer. Mm-hmm. One of our mandates is to reinvest all of our after-tax net income every year in acquisitions within the group. And in order to, you know, put the requisite time and attention and focus on that, typically these roles are split mm-hmm. between operating leaders and acquiring leaders. Now, I was the acquiring leader at Adapt IT for many years. That's my first passion, my love. And therefore, as we came through the integration and transformation process of delisting and joining the Volaris Group, mm-hmm. We had to go through that process in the first instance, which took some time. We were a fairly large acquisition at the time relative to the standard size. And so that was the first phase. And as we've worked through that and adopted these best practices, so Adapt IT has strengthened tremendously. in terms of its operating results and become, you know, much, shall we say, much more in line with global best practice benchmarks, which is now, you know, what we benchmark ourselves against. And this is the data-driven environment. And so that actually has freed me up. And we've also split our businesses back into the business units at a much more granular level in line with the Constellation philosophy. So the business is in a strong position. I have had a COO. I could readily appoint Tony Vicente into the CEO role. And really it's just capacitating for that future growth and aligning with the business model, which is to have basically the business, you know, serving customers and really, you know, optimize the business, focus on customers, and then with the retained earnings, reinvest those in terms of further acquisitions.
So you're on the hunt all the time for deals.
Yes, yes. And I think, you know, we do this ourselves because, you know, to tell our story and explain ourselves to potential companies where our value proposition might resonate, we need to do this ourselves. It's not like you can take a corporate finance professional and have them accurately represent what it would mean to join our group. So we do that ourselves, and acquisitions are federated, the M&A activity is federated within Constellation, so that we come to market you know, in person and meet with companies that would might consider joining our group. We explain what our value proposition is, that we buy and hold and grow forever those businesses. This value proposition is extremely compelling to founders who have put their life's work into their business, building it for, you know, 20, 25, sometimes 30 years. And they really are interested in life after the deal. What happens to their company? What happens to their people? What happens to their customer? What happens to their IP, their products? And, you know, that's what's so compelling about our business is they can sell into our group and they can stay, do what they love, run their business to the next level. And in fact, if they want to even grow their career beyond their own business, they can become acquisitive. There are roles all over the world which they can grow into. So it's, you know, the alternative is often just a financial transaction. And often leaders or founders, you know, don't get to stay the next round necessarily. And so it's a very different value proposition. And for us to explain that, we need to talk about what it means to be part of us, you know, how the peer network operates, what is the investment in people, what is the best practice sharing, how does it feel to be on the inside, you know, what's my own testimony, what's it been like for me. And so that's really very personal. And we want to have these conversations.
You don't rush into anything.
No, because also, we don't want to build the relationship in the hopes that there's an imminent opportunity to invest in that company. We actually want to get to know the company, want a company to get to know us, and we really are building that relationship so that if and when those, you know, founders or shareholders of that company decide it might be the time to divest of their shareholding, they already know us, and we come to mind immediately, and they might invite us directly to explore that process with them. And that's when we find, you know, it's the best approach is when we've got to know them across time and we have a genuine relationship with them. So we're very patient. We're going to be around acquiring companies for years and years to come. So we're not in a rush. We're happy to wait and be patient for when the time is right for these companies. And so we want to keep in touch with them, you know, and follow how they are progressing.
So Adapt.it, it fits under Omegro, does it?
Yes.
And what else does Omegro own?
Omegro owns a vast number of companies, probably another 25, 29, around about there. And these are in a number of different verticals, supply chain, warehousing supply chain.
Across the world.
Telematics across the world, yes. No corner of the globe untouched. ERP, all sorts of different verticals, shipping, marine, a lot of different verticals. So we are a multi-vertical portfolio. There are some which are single verticals and specialized, but we are global and multi-vertical. And as we go to market here now, we would look at all verticals of basically own IP software companies or highly differentiated if it's third-party IP wrapped with own IP. And, you know, we're looking at companies that would be sort of $4 million or so in annual revenue, ideally. They could become a standalone business within our environment, but slightly smaller ones could become strategic tuck-ins, like the one we did recently with Spargaru into our hospitality division. So we will look at smaller companies, and we'd love to follow their growth as well to see when, you know, when it might eventually make sense.
So are you principally then focused on acquisitions for Omegro?
Yes.
Or are you also very much focused on acquisitions for Adapt IT?
Both. So that would depend upon... Adapt IT being the South African black empowered business that we are, we're level one. If that makes sense, that business would go into Adapt IT. But again, it could be anywhere in the rest of the globe, and in which case it may not necessarily be part of Adapt IT. It would be part of Omegro.
Yeah. But if it's a South African acquisition, it's likely to be folded into Adapt IT.
It's likely to be, but it will retain its own brand and identity.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yeah. So what are you looking for in acquisitions?
So we're looking for own IP software, B2B, ideally, and, you know, mature software businesses which really do some form of mission critical software for their customers. And that software needs to be differentiated and highly valuable to those customers. So, you know, in the sense the recurring revenue and the long-term stickiness or value to the customer needs to be there. Mm-hmm. That's where we find our sweetest spot. We don't really have an upper limit in terms of, you know, what Constellation can buy, and they've done some larger transactions, so that's not an issue for us. And access to capital is not an issue. It's really finding the right kind of assets and the kind of, you know, leaders who identify with the culture and, you know, the future prospects of their business in our environment. So, you know, that's what we're really looking for, software companies, you know, from software companies with 20, 30 people all the way to several hundreds. Mm-hmm. And they can be in any geography, in any vertical. I happen to
any
focus.
Vertical.
Any vertical.
Mm-hmm. Because Adapt IT historically, sorry to interrupt, yes. Adapt IT historically is focused on specific verticals.
We did, mm-hmm. Yes. And we would always look for a substantial transaction to get into a new vertical. Mm-hmm. You know, we will still do that, and we will look at any vertical. We have concentrations in certain verticals already, but that's not a limiting factor. Mm-hmm. So it's really B2B software, own IP, with deep value to the customers, where, you know, we want to basically serve that customer in perpetuity, mm-hmm. with a great level of investment in R&D, close proximity, customer-led innovation, remaining extremely relevant to the customer through any technological change, you know, including AI now.
Okay. Yeah. So are you finding these assets out there at the right price?
So we are value investors, and I think we're very disciplined about that. So there are certain transactions we won't be able to do because of price, but I think there are plenty of software companies out there. And, you know, it has to be a combination for us of the value proposition of we buy and hold and grow that company forever and its people forever. The analogy I like to make is, you know, are you in it for the wedding or for the marriage, right? Like the day after the wedding, you've now got your check, you've got your price, but what's life like after that, right? So if the sellers and the shareholders are really, thoughtful about the future of the business, then I think it's quite compelling, and price is one aspect. I do think that the qualitative aspects of what happens to the business post an acquisition are very important, mm-hmm. To the kinds of sellers who our value proposition resonates with.
Mm-hmm. And are you finding the owners of these software businesses are valuing their businesses in line with what you'd expect, or are they? You know, what's the market like at the moment?
Well, it's chaotic, as we know. I think. You know, it's listed multiples in some cases can be quite misleading. I don't think those are not the prices we pay. That's it's a voting machine. If you know Mr. Buffett's view on that, and in long term, it's a weighing machine. But we tend to find that we may not be the most compelling on price, but on a combined value proposition, I think there's a huge amount of merit. And Constellation has been able to deploy all of its capital historically, mm-hmm. year upon year. So the prices that we offer are in fact market related and have been accepted by other buyers in the market of similar assets. So it can take some time for a seller to digest the value of their business because they've not tested that. Mm. And of course, it's their prerogative to test it elsewhere mm-hmm. should they wish, and we respect that. We're very patient, so we're disciplined. We tend not to go into horse trading mm-hmm. around pricing. You know, there may be some flexibility on structuring, with regards, for example, to earn-out versus upfront structuring, etc. But essentially, we're value investors, mm-hmm. and that's where we are disciplined. And if a seller is not, appreciating that price, then of course we may not get to a deal. Mm-hmm. But we remain interested in those businesses, and sometimes they change hands more than once, and sometimes we become the happy owner in due course. So we're always patient and respectful of mm-hmm. of those considerations.
Beyond the hard numbers, profit, etc., are there softer things you look at as well, like culture and all that sort of thing? And how much time do you actually spend with these companies before you make a decision to buy them?
So we have a fairly, first of all, the getting to know these companies, that process of building a relationship across time is so valuable because you follow how they're doing. You have regular conversations with the leaders, you kind of know them before they get to the point that they may want to divest. Mm-hmm. And so you already have a background and a history on them. And then we have a very efficient process of, once we're under NDA, of course, we would analyze the business on a limited set of information to very quickly get to a position of whether, a non-binding indicative offer to see whether we can get into the ballpark mm-hmm. On price and structure. If so, then we go to, a formal part of the process, LOI and the rest of the confirmatory diligence would follow. So it's not onerous. Mm-hmm. But we are detailed when it comes down to, eventually closing that transaction. Mm-hmm. We're very disciplined and detailed, and we do want to understand what we're buying. Mm-hmm. And people is a very important consideration. We want management who are really committed to their business.
Do you lock them in?
We don't. We don't because we think being a willing volunteer is better. Mm-hmm. And we want to make sure that the environment is really empowering and enthusing, and people come to work every day because they love to do so. They love learning. They love learning from their peers. The culture is very, it's a culture of curiosity, continuous learning, humility, a peer-to-peer kind of relationship. And so it's a really great working environment. And we think that we don't want we don't want to handcuff people in a way that's, false. If they don't want to be there, there's plenty of good succession planning, etc. We end up with a willing volunteer, mindset, and that's much more powerful. Mm-hmm. And obviously fair remuneration, a good incentive program where we're all staked. Ultimately, senior leaders are all staked in Constellation Equity.
Okay. Yeah. Fascinating. So, we know the South African economy has been in a bit of a funk, to put it mildly, for the last 10 or 15 years. Mm. There's stronger economic growth elsewhere on the continent. What is your Africa strategy beyond South Africa?
We're not limited in terms of, we'd look at anything that has that kind of a software business in it. So we have focused on East Africa. Mm-hmm. We have an office in Nairobi and we're active there. We also have a presence in Nigeria. We have been visiting and engaging in Egypt as well as in Morocco. So we're covering off key geographies there as well now as the Middle East. So we really don't look at the, we kind of have a borderless view. Mm-hmm. In terms of the team, we focus on particular geographies just for practicality's sake. We have quite reasonable experience in the emerging market space, so that's a good focus for us. So yes, we're looking across Africa and the Middle East and in some of our verticals also globally.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and are you finding interesting assets in some of these African territories?
Yes, absolutely.
Well-run businesses?
Yes, mm-hmm. yes, they're very smart people, and you know, digital Savannah. I forget the name of it, but you know, Silicon Savannah, I think it's yes. called, and there are very smart people doing great work there, and we are delighted by that. Maybe not some of them, not as mature and old as some of the South African businesses we find, but very interesting businesses, and we're interested in talking to them, and they, you know, they're welcome to approach us as well. Mm-hmm. We continue to find new companies undiscovered, which have been around for a decade, you know. Or two, and that's wonderful. And we would love to connect with those companies and talk to them, and we welcome any approach from them.
Okay. Would you consider a listed entity as well?
Yes, we okay. will. We will. So we're pretty good at carve-outs as the Constellation Group. I think the Constellation Group's done about 100 carve-outs. And this is something we're really good at because we're super efficient at doing that discreetly, you know, in a way that we know how to go about that pretty effectively, efficiently. And if something is non-core, mm-hmm. you know, to a big corporate or a listed, you know, it's a very efficient way to deal with that. And certainty, you know, certainty of proceeds and time efficiency. I think we're a very good partner for those kinds of transactions. And certainly we would look at that.
Just lastly, do you miss being part of, I suppose ultimately you are part of a listed entity, but do you miss running a listed entity, and are there any downsides to AdaptIT no longer being on the market?
I don't miss it, Duncan, because I'm, you know, I think as a consequence of, you know, corporate misdemeanor, mm-hmm. we've ended up with over-regulation in the listed environment, where you end up as a listed potentially spending too much time on governance mm-hmm. and not enough time on your core business and focusing on what you're actually trying to do to generate shareholder returns.
That's so interesting.
I think, you know, you have to be quite a big scale mm-hmm. to do this. Of course, the market has a purpose for, you know, capital raising, etc.
Sure.
We already had the brand and profile, so that was useful. However, I think really, you know, the burden of governance that falls to you know, honest companies that are well run mm-hmm. as a result of misdemeanors of you know mm-hmm. leaders who've done things which are illegal.
Yes.
Instead of dealing with the misdemeanor, you're now applying regulation to all of the compliant companies, and that's a big burden. It's a big distraction from your core business. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I would say it's much better to focus on your business in the delisted environment. Of course, at scale, it can have merit.
Mm-hmm. Great chatting to you, Tiffany. Tiffany Dunsden is former CEO of AdaptIT and now head of M&A for Omegro in the Middle East and Africa. Thanks so much for sharing your insights with our audience today.
Thank you, Duncan. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.